The practice of insight meditation and the practice of Buddhism is very much this question of loss, this universal experience of loss, is very much at the heart of the practice as it's taught and has been taught in all the years since the time of the Buddha. In fact, the story of Siddhartha, the prince Siddhartha, who became the Buddha, and the story of how he began his spiritual search, begins with him going out. He had lived a very protected, sheltered life, and his family had hidden from him the truth of loss and aging and impermanence and so on, in many, many ways, just giving him, feeding him all these pleasant experiences. He moved out beyond the boundaries of his very protected life, and he encountered, this, a very significant story in the Buddhist texts about how Siddhartha encountered the realities of aging and illness and death, in the form of seeing somebody who was old and somebody who was, covered with sores and was very ill, and then, a funeral procession for somebody who had died. And these were completely new and kind of illusion-shattering experiences for him. And so he asked myself, how can I, it would be folly for me to try to find a sense of meaning and well-being in circumstances in my life that are changing and are beyond my control. And so that began his journey into seeking the awakening that he eventually came to and shared with the world. So it was touching into the realities of aging, sickness, and death that opened him to the profound truth of impermanence. And this is such a key learning that we all need to take in, that the whole universe is teaching us all the time change and loss. Everything is becoming something else. And so, when we see the seasons, when we contemplate the stories that we're told by scientists about the beginnings of the universe and how stars and galaxies and planets emerged from this original bursting forth of energy that we call the Big Bang. And we see that everything is characterized by there's loss in everything. But as somebody mentioned, there's also something new emerging. And so everything that we live, everything that comes into our life is changing us, and as we are interconnected in our interconnected lives are changing the world around us. And so we discover that resisting change and resisting that things are the way they are and life is unfolding as it is unfolding is the source of suffering. Things don't work out the way we want them to work out, but they work out in another way. They work out in whatever way that they are going to. We also think that we have something in our life. So when we have a partner, when we have a job, when we have children, you know, we think this is what we have. We use the possessive pronoun or the possessive verb, I guess, that I have this, I have children. And we believe it because that's the way we language it. But our children are not ours, and our spouses are not ours, and our parents are not ours. They don't belong to us. And as one person mentioned in our sharing a few minutes ago, you know, these waves that come, these waves that manifest in our lives, you know, birth and death, you know, they're just happening. I remember after the loss, after my son died, and I was working, it just so happened that about a month after he died, I was supposed to be co-teaching with one of my teachers, and I told him that I didn't think I could do it, but that I would just kind of be there on the retreat. And it was actually a great support. And next to the retreat center where we were holding the retreat, there's a cemetery. It's one of these very old cemeteries where, you know, it dates back a few hundred years, about probably 300 years, some of the graves. And I walked around the cemetery, and I was just looking at these gravestones, and I was grieving the loss of my son, who was 33. And I saw all of these, you know, young men who had died in both the First World War and the Second World War, you know, 18 years old, 20 years old. I saw all these young children who had died and all these infants who had died, you know, a few days old. And I just took in how universal this experience of being a mother who had lost her son or lost her daughter, you know, how universal that was. Because, you know, I had this idea, even though it was, you know, I know better, I knew better then, but it just feels like, oh, it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be this way. It's not supposed to happen this way. And that can also be reinforced by, you know, by the world around you. It's like, people say that to you, and they say, that's the worst thing that can happen. And, I mean, it's definitely one of the worst things that can happen, I guess, because we put so much of ourselves and we live so much, so much shared life between parents and children. And between other, in other relationships as well. So, so I guess what I'm really pointing at here is that it's not that there's something wrong that this happened. It's that this is what happened, and it's not what we wanted to happen. And but it's the way it happened. There's so much complexity around grief and loss. You know, whether it's the death of somebody, or whether it's the loss of a job, or whether it's unrequited love, or all the different possible losses that I mentioned earlier today. So many ways that we experience loss. And so our feeling of grief may be mixed through with anger. Anger at the way that person expressed themselves at the end of their life. Maybe we really wanted and expected that they would be more empathetic to what we were going through, and they weren't. They were really wrapped up in what was happening to them. We may feel remorse that we weren't present enough in the process. We may feel grief, a kind of, as you know, somebody was speaking about, a kind of a not only the grief of the loss, but the grief of lost opportunity to communicate the love that we have. And so, you know, all of this can stretch our hearts. All of this can be our teacher. You know, I've said to myself and to others many times that my son was my first and best teacher, because in being born he broke open my heart to love. He was my first child, and I learned that I could love someone more than I love myself, and put somebody's life before my own. And in his dying, he taught me deeply about impermanence. And so, you know, all of these life experiences become part of us. And when we open to them and open to the grief, to the remorse, to the feeling of anger and disappointment we may feel, when we allow that to be received with compassion and kindness, when we give that space to be known within us, then we can really receive the full gift of that person's living and dying, the full gift of everything that they had to give us, because even in their dying, or even in their going away, or even in the dissolution of the relationship, or even in the loss of the job, there's something that we can receive. And another thing, that another complexity around grief, you know, could be that we feel a sense of relief. You know, it can happen if somebody has been sick for a long time, that we feel a sense of relief for them, for their suffering, but we also might feel a sense of relief for ourselves. It's like, wow, that was really difficult to journey with that person in their illness. You know, And my son had mental illness, and it was really difficult to be with him and be with him figuring out in each moment, you know, what the right response was for him and for me. And it was really hard to accept that along with the grief and the loss and the sense of well, there were a lot of feelings. But there was also relief because it had been hard. It had been a hard journey to be with him. And I had to accept that, that was also real, and allow myself that. And feelings of guilt and feelings of self-blame, all of this comes up. So in practice, especially in the Tibetan tradition, there's an expression that in meditation, nothing is excluded. Nothing is excluded. So it's not that there's a right way to feel. Like, feelings are just feelings. They move through us and they change, and we learn about what it is to be a human being by fully receiving everything. It's not that we believe that the feeling is justified or that we justify it or it's right or wrong. It just is. Emotions just are. And all of these complexities around our losses and events in our lives all have to do with who we think we are and what we think we have. So in Buddhist teaching, there's teaching on love in which we highlight that there are different kinds of love. You know, there is a quality of love, the Pali word is metta, and it means loving kindness. And this quality of love is really all about wishing well for the other being, the other person, the other sentient being, an animal, life itself, loving friendship for, you know, our whole earth, the trees, the environment, the oceans, everything that sustains our lives as an interconnected system. And so that we can really wish well to everything with a kind of not being concerned about or not focusing on, you know, what I have or what's about me, but it's just a kind of a generous, unconditional is the word that's usually used, unconditional love, a generous love, a love which is not judging or a love which is not preferring, but just wishing well. And in all of our loves, there is that element of loving kindness. In the way that we love, there is usually, anyway, that element of loving kindness. But there's also the element of, you know, attachment. And when we talk about attachment, it's about me. It's about what I need. It's about what I want. The word attachment in in Buddhist jargon, has a kind of a negative kind of rap, you know, a negative vibe. But actually, the word attachment in psychological circles is kind of being redeemed. It's it has a really positive and natural quality to it. Like, children need to feel attached to their parents. Children need to feel attached and safe, and that their needs will be met. They need to be received and listened to and affirmed. And that quality of attachment is very human. And bringing that awareness of that attachment, that human quality of attachment is so important, has come more into, I'm not a psychologist, but I'm interested, and so I, you know, I read and I hear, and so it's come more into psychology of relationships, you know, that in our significant relationships, you know, especially in primary relationships like marriages and, you know, partnerships and also friendships, there can be this kind of attachment but there's a kind of a fulfillment of various wants and needs that we feel safe, and it's very human and it's okay, but it is about what I need. And it's really our attachment that, you know, we feel has gotten broken, has gotten ripped, has gotten torn when we lose a relationship. Because there's something in us energetically that's reaching out. You know, when I would think of my son and I would feel this love for him, and I could feel energetically kind of reaching out. I wanted an object to attach that feeling to, and the object wasn't there. I mean, you know, the object wasn't there really most of the time because he was living in his own place, and he was living he spent almost a year in Korea, and, you know, so really most of the time in my life, actually that object that I wanted to connect with wasn't in my sensory, you know, realm right now, but I imagined that, you know, it could be if I, you know, reconnected with him. And with the death, you know, I realized, well, it was okay. I felt okay when I knew he was somewhere in the world, whoever he was in this moment, because we're always changing and becoming somebody else, right? But the he that I imagined my son to be was somewhere. But then when he wasn't, that reaching out felt like pain and suffering. And so I shifted. I learned to shift my balance to be with just the love that was still alive, still there and still is. Just that quality of love without attachment, because we can connect with that. So much of the love that we feel for the people who are in our lives really was, you know, I wish you well. I want you to be happy. You know, generous love. Love which is not about me. Love which is not about, you know, what I want or what I need. Even though, you know, I'm not judging that, I'm not putting a judgment on, you know, like, because it's real in relationships. We do have attachment, and it's okay. But it's also important and good to be aware of what's what. You know, is this what I'm feeling right now? Is this about my needs? Or is this about really caring for the other? And especially as parents, that can become a little hazy sometimes. And even in our relationships with our partners or friendships, it can sometimes be a little unclear. So we want to be honest with compassion and non-judgment. In the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus talks about love, and it's one of my favorite phrases from the Gospel. And he says, it's when he's reflecting on love and reflecting on even loving those who we identify as our enemies. And he said, "Let your love be like God, who causes the sun to shine and the rain to fall on both the just and the unjust." So we can wish well. We can open to that quality of love, no matter what the conditions are. So a bit more maybe difficult point, or a deeper, more subtle point in the teaching is that, I alluded to it a few minutes ago, as we meditate and our meditation deepens, we begin to realize that, you know, we are not... Who we are is something that can't be defined. Who we are, we tend to objectify ourselves and identify with our roles and with the way that we present in our lives, you know, as a man or a woman, or, you know, as a parent or as a teacher or as a daughter or a sister. You know, so many ways that we identify with. But as we deepen in meditation, we're living more from the inside. We're living more attuned to our inner experience as it is unfolding moment by moment, and not so much looking at ourselves from the outside. You know, when we look at ourselves from the outside, we reify ourselves. We make ourselves a thing. We make ourselves an object, and then we judge whether that object is good enough or not good enough. And a lot of the times we judge it's not good enough. So as mindfulness deepens and we become more present to our inner experience, we're living more in moment by moment awareness of our inner life. And we discover that who we are can't be defined, is a mystery, is an ever-unfolding, an ever-changing reality. And then a deepening of that discovery for ourselves is to realize that every other being is the same, in that they also, each one, is not a thing, is not solid, is changing, is evolving, is a mystery, is undefinable. And so, when we contemplate that, when we touch that profound truth in relation to the person, quote unquote, that we lost, if we realize that they also are no object, that they also are a process, and can't be defined, then what we may recognize that we are reifying them, making an object out of them, and trying to hold on to that object. Do you get what I'm saying? It's something that is it's not that easy or obvious, but we begin to realize that what we have in our lives, we don't really have. There's not much we have in an ultimate sense beyond the experience of this moment. So that also really, so who, you know, who was my son, and what did I have, you know? And it kind of breaks open this story that I may be holding about what I lost and what happened in my life, what, you know, my life. So going back to that image that somebody offered of the waves rising and falling. It's all rising and falling, like the waves, you know, are dependent on the tides and the currents and the wind and the sun and all of this, you know, so many different, and the rotation of the earth. It's all of our risings and fallings in our life, and each breath is interconnected with so many other things. And so we can't fully understand and certainly can't control how this process unfolds. And so we can, so the love that can be felt, that doesn't need an object to attach to, it can still be known, it's still alive. And we can strengthen and deepen that wellspring, which is the source of love that's present within us. And that source is bigger than ourselves. So in our process of grieving, and how meditation helps us in our process of grieving, is that just as I spoke today in the instruction about giving ourselves space, like having that space to feel the sensation in the body of the breath or of an unpleasant sensation or a pleasant sensation, or having the space to be aware of the thought instead of getting hooked and carried away by the thought. So giving our grief space to be received is how meditation helps us to work with and allow that grief, which is also a process, an impermanent process, allow that grief to move through us. So connecting in, what is the sensation? What is the energy? What am I feeling right now? Giving it a compassionate space to be received. Can I receive it in simplicity, in its raw energy, without creating a story? And, you know, in my experience, when my son died, I felt like my heart was breaking. It really did feel like there was a kind of a breaking in my heart. And it was painful. There was this really deep pain, and there was a kind of heaviness that I felt. And the heaviness permeated my body, and a kind of situational depression, in which I just didn't have energy to do anything. And I just felt like, well, this is, I just need to give space to that. I need to just be present with that. And so I allowed it just to be there. And I have this image of myself sitting in my meditation room, just feeling it. And it was, a very powerful meditation object. And then as I was feeling it, I noticed that sometimes it would intensify, and I noticed that sometimes it would open and there would be a little bit of space. I noticed that my mind wanted to go into the story about what happened. Like, there were a lot of if onlys. If only, we had done this, or he had done that. Or if only, the system, the healthcare system, the mental health care system had been better. If only he had met the right person. If only, he had taken his medication. If only this, if only that. If only, back to his early childhood. And I just really, I just didn't go there, because I saw that it was totally futile, because that's not what happened. And that's gone. That's over. And so I need to accept that the past was what it was. It just was what it was. Because there's nothing I can do about it. And I can just receive it. And it can shape and inform who I am right now. I mean, not that I was thinking that way, but all I could think was, don't go there. That's just gonna tie you up in knots and create a new story. It's a self-construction about what I should have done or could have done. And so I just spent weeks and months just really being present with that. Began to notice at times that, things that I mentioned before, there's relief. There's a quality of relief, and I felt really guilty about that. Like, how could that be, that I would feel relieved, and just accepted that, and was really supported by a lot of loving people, but accepted that that's just what was coming up, and that's what was being felt. And noticed that, as time went by, there was opening to peace, there was opening to serenity and acceptance and equanimity, there was opening even to joy, that life was coming through in new ways, and that when I gave myself that space to be present with what was coming through, what life was bringing forward in my life, that sometimes there was joy, sometimes there was creativity, But if I would push away the grief, I was also closing myself to the new life that wanted to come through. And I also learned that being open to compassion for ourselves meant also nourishing myself. And that was, this is kind of a bit more practical, but it's very real part of grieving, I think, is taking care of ourselves, taking care of our bodies, and taking care of our happiness. So, you know, so if music is something that is comforting or gives you joy, or if nature, I found I was just spending a lot of time in nature. It's really important to spend time in nature. Giving ourselves that space to be nourished and restored. And when we give ourselves that space for grief to be received and to be known, you know, one of the reasons why we may resist doing that is fear. We may feel fear, like, if I open to this grief, will it destroy me? Will it overwhelm me? Will it be this ocean of tears that never stops? Will I drown in it? And what we discover is that it doesn't. That there is, that when we are the space of presence and openness, it doesn't fill us. We don't get filled up. We don't drown in it. It's something that moves through us. It's something that we can bear. And it teaches us about humanity. When we have the courage to be with what is painful. What I've discovered for myself is that having opened fully to the loss and the grief has given me a kind of courageous compassion, a fearless compassion, that I feel I can step in to be with somebody else in their grief, because I know that I have been with my own. And that fearless compassion is such a gift to the world. To realize that, you know, I'm not afraid to be present with somebody in their loss, in their pain. We need that, rather than always reassuring or saying, you know, somebody said, you know, the timing is going to be this. You know, somebody said to me once, yeah, it'll take 5 years. And I said, you don't know anything about my process. Why are you giving me this time frame that it's going to be 5 years before I'm, you know, what does it mean to, you know, does it mean that then my life returns to what it was? Of course not. But nor is it worse than what it was. It just is what it is. And so this journey, you know, brings us through so many different aspects. This, we talked about, remorse, and there's also forgiveness. Forgiveness may come up, that we need to forgive ourselves, we need to forgive the other, and that's a process. And so that also is part of this whole unfolding. And we may come to gratitude for their person, for their life, and for the fullness of their life. You know, that whatever it was the fullness of their life. So I'd like to end my talk here and invite any thoughts or response that you may have coming out of things I've said.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.